The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Ross Dellinger, in about 30 minutes from Sports Illustrated, he covered the meetings yesterday between the two conference commissioners, Kliakoff and Sankey, with several United States senators trying to get some help on NIL. Let's get back to the calls, and Augie is up next.
Paul, speaking of Ross Dellinger, there was an idiot around here who kept calling him Ross Dillinger. I'm like, wait a second. I don't think he carries a machine gun. But I'm sure others do that, too. And it was great to hear from Dwayne, Paul, another human interest story you're responsible for. I've talked to Dwayne from time to time, and I owe him a call. It's been a while. And, I mean, I thought that word that Jim was using to describe Matt was a little harsh, the P word. I guess that's one of those borderline words, right?
Well, I don't think you'll go to jail for saying it, but it's a tweener word, yes.
A polite society, right?
Yeah. I happen to like the word, though.
Oh, it's a great word.
Yeah.
There's a counter word that refers to the other gender, but I won't get into that.
That will get you in a little more trouble, I think.
That's the one that really gets people. You can say a lot of things, but when you say that word,
you are not going to survive that one in the public domain.
No way. And you were kind to the elderly and the demented today when you said that Larry had a limited vocabulary. There are other ways to describe that, but you know, it was interesting yesterday. Larry came on all fired up about me because he thought I was attacking his son, and then you came to, not to the rescue, but you did cite that his son did sound like he had been drinking, and Larry said, no, he's not drinking. He was smoking a doobie. Like, that was better than drinking. Drinking is legal. Smoking prohibited vegetation is not. So why would he have told you that if he was upset with the alcohol bit?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you're asking me to do something I'm not qualified to do.
And that's to figure out the mind of
that is to get in the pea brain of Larry from Shelby and try to figure out what he means.
Now, can you imagine giving Larry a badge and a gun and telling him to keep the community safe?
No. And you've heard the way he used to keep it safe.
I've heard those stories. I mean, he might be good for certain callers on the show, but for the rest of us law-abiding citizens, would you feel safe with Larry walking around with a gun?
No.
I wouldn't either. But, Paul, I just heard some really startling news. Coops is leaving?
Mark Kubiak, who was here day one. Now, again, I realize some of you go back beyond the television, but he was here for day one of the television show.
Are you going to have Coops give a little soliloquy?
Yes, he will be here late in the show explaining why he's leaving. So really, it's interesting because when this show launched on the SEC network in August of 2014, there were two producers. And after today, were you here, Randy?
Yeah.
Randy was here. The two producers will be gone. Who would have ever thought I would have outlasted them?
Well, the way I see it, Coops is part of the adult supervision of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Who's going to provide that now that he's gone?
We don't know what the succession plan looks like. We will know shortly. And then you're asking me to try to get into the minds of ESPN suits.
Oh, boy.
So you don't have a... I would think you'd have, like, at least 60% of the sway over that.
Well, I do know who is being considered, but here's where it gets tricky. Exactly how all this comes out in the wash is unknown.
Sure. Well, I think it's going to be a big loss, And I propose that we take up and start an NIL collective before the end of the day to see if we can keep him. You think that's possible?
No, I don't.
I feel like,
you know, my feeling about this, Augie, and this is awkward saying it in front of him. But, yeah, when somebody is committed to doing something else, you have to let them do it. Right, Randy?
That's right.
You can't stop them. And
no.
I've been where he is, about to leave, and I've heard the pleas. And you have to be determined. You just have to make up your mind. You can't let a couple of bucks affect what you do.
Yeah, and I've been in that situation about 14 times in my life, and it's always hard to leave. But I just want to say this to Coots. I'm sure he can hear. I absolutely appreciate everything that you've done for the show, and you've been a lot of entertainment for me and a lot of people. So thank you for your service. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you very much. I feel like somebody's about to come out and start humming Thanks for the Memories. Mm-hmm. Let's get Bob Hope to do that. let's try Kyle next in Miami. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, Paul. My question is, with Miami as a private school, and recently it seems like they finally invested the finances necessary to compete with the bigger programs. You know, they hired Clemson's AD. They got Mario Cristobal in there now. What is your reasonable 3 to 5 year outlook on what Miami can be and what they'll do?
Kyle, I would be very disappointed if Miami does not become a contender for the college football playoff in a reasonably short window. 2 to 5 years, somewhere in there. And the reason I say that is they have some adults down there now. Radakovich is considered one of the best ADs in the country. I think the previous guy was okay, but he was not in Dan Radakovich's league. And I happen to think Mario Cristobal is one of the top 10 coaches around and one of the best recruiters. So when you add that to the current state we're in, plus his ties to the school, I think it's a winning combination.
Who would you think has a better outlook 3 to 5 years between Florida's big three, Miami, Florida, or Florida State?
Well, I think it comes down to Florida and Miami. I'll give Miami a little bit of a head start for this reason. Their path is much easier. And I think, you know, winning the ACC will be easier than winning the East Division or winning the SEC for Billy Napier. I really do like Napier. I think people will be surprised, if not shocked, at how much is going on right now in Gainesville and how much has needed to go on for a long time. But I think Florida was stuck in the past for a lot of reasons, but they are not anymore. I'd give Miami a little bit of an edge because of only having to really beat a handful of teams versus the usual suspects in the SEC.
Right. All right. Well, thanks, man.
Thank you. Really good to hear from you. And an excellent question. You thought so too, huh? Ranger is in Knoxville. Hello, Ranger.
Good Friday afternoon to you, Paul. You okay?
We are doing great. I mean, we decided to it's not 5 o'clock here yet, but who cares? Right,
matter.
Randy? I mean, we're celebrating Cinco de Mayo today.
Exactly. Yeah. I wanted to clarify something from your last guest that you had on.
Sure.
Did he say that the 37 points that Alabama allowed was the lowest in college football history?
No, I know where you're going here. I think he said modern, because I'm pretty sure that Tennessee team in, what, 38 or 39 gave up fewer?
Yeah, well, 39 they went undefeated and gave up 6, and then 41 they went undefeated and unscored upon.
Yeah, I've told this story before, but I think it's worth telling it again. The Tennessee team in 19, 39. Gave up, coached by General Nealand, of course. Did not give up a point in the regular season. And it gave up two touchdowns in the Rose Bowl. So let me tell you a quick story, Rager. About 10 years ago, and I do not remember the name of the network. It was right before I came here. It was like Sports South or, you know, one of those cable. There was a cable network in Atlanta that used to do some of the Braves games. And it was whatever it was. I don't remember. I do not remember. Fox Sports 1, something. Let's just say that. So anyway, they hired me to host a series called the best of everything, and what it meant was the best coaches in the SEC history, the best teams, the best quarterback. You get the drill. So one day we get to we're doing the best defenses, and I got paid basically to read a script, and we're doing here are the 10 best defenses in SEC history. And I did 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. And I got to one. It was like the Alabama 92 defense or something. And I finally said, stop. I said, they're not the best defense. I said, the best defense of all time is the 39 Tennessee Vols. I said, I'm not reading this. And all of a sudden, all these like typical nerdy TV producers came out of their offices and they said, what are you talking about? I said, don't you guys know about the Tennessee defense? They said, yeah, we've heard of it. I said, so why aren't we putting it in here? And the guy said, we just don't have video of that team, so we can't use it. I said, oh, okay. Now, but it is by far the greatest defense in college football history.
Yeah. I wanted to tag off of something that Jim said yesterday.
George Kaffigo was on that team, wasn't he?
I don't want to discount his experience, but I want to share with my experience. In 1982, October 16th, 1982, and I know that date because I'm sitting here in my Vol room looking at the banner that says the streak is over, that we beat Alabama. I think they'd beat us 9 years in a row. And I happened to be a ball boy on the east sideline over there in Neyland. And after the game, I ran on the field, and I ran probably 10 to 12 feet to Coach Bryant, and I told him to go to hell.
Ooh.
And I didn't stick around long, and he had this sad look in his eye.
Ranger, would you like to come into the confessional right now and ask for absolution? Well, because you don't tell Coach Bryant to do that. Anyway, we're up against a break, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome back. Great to have all of you here. And let's check in with Joe next in Texas. So hello, Joe.
Hello, Paul. Thanks for having me on again. I'm the long-term professor and dean at Texas A&M.
Oh, absolutely. Remember you well.
Yep. Well, this is a little different. My wife and I were listening the other day when you talked to Griffith and then made your Shakespeare reference. And unfortunately, we've both taken a lot of English classes. And we've agreed since you talked, you said that, SEC football is a lot like Shakespeare.
For example, I
assume that's why you said what you did. But for example, Macbeth, you know, is clearly Kirby, and King Duncan is clearly Saban.
Ooh.
Now Macbeth kills Duncan, okay, and all kinds of things happen. But then there's other people, too. I mean, like Mike Leach is Falstaff. And now we get to Hamlet, and we spent a lot of time figuring out who's Hamlet. And we decided it was Lane Kiffin. Now, why did we do that?
This is great.
He's young. He's handsome. He's charismatic. He seems to have a little problem knowing exactly how he wants to live his life and stuff, you know? And now all this is great. The problem is Shakespeare is filled with the women. Now, I don't know how we get to the women except maybe with your callers, but the callers are really a source of great stuff. For example, you know, when Hamlet comes back from England, he finds some grave diggers and they have a skull. And he says, whose skull is that? Because he's afraid he's going to die. And, you know, it seems to me that's got to be one of your main guys, like Iron Man or I don't want to say Jim, because I don't see Jim doing that. But anyway, so I would say Iron Man is old Yorick. Anyway, enough. I
kept expecting you to to go to Henry II and give us who will know and rid me of this meddlesome coach.
And then. Well, the biggest problem we had was I really wanted to know who Jimbo would be.
Ooh.
And, you know, the most obvious thing would be somebody who cares a lot about money. But I'm not going to get into that because that would get you to Shylock.
Hmm.
And
well, here's
I don't
a,
want
here's a, listen, I Jimbo say this. I say this with great admiration for Jimbo. If Jimbo was listening now, he would be lost in this conversation. So I think we're good.
Well, anyway,
Joe, you've really come up, and I'm trying to think of what forum I could ever use this. I've done some comedy routines on the SEC before, and I've done it. It's a little crasser than comparing coaches to Shakespeare. And if I ever decide this is the final show, I will share with you this bit I once did in front of a group many, many years ago. I would never do it again. But I don't know if there's a market for your coach as a Shakespearean character. But I was thoroughly entertained by it.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. And you have a great weekend and take care. Bye bye.
Thank you very much, Joe. And Joe really, I know who Joe is. He was a longtime dean at Texas A&M, a very prominent person on that campus. Did you follow that very closely? Yeah. There's so many other possibilities. Do you know what I was talking about? I'll tell you during the break. Even in 2022, I just want to make sure of the year, I will not reveal what I was talking about. But it's about 20 years ago. It was a funny bit, but it's not happening anymore. James is in Valdosta.
Hello.
Hello, Joe. James?
Well, the They called me all kind of different names when I called in, but it is James. And
now, does anybody ever really call James? Isn't there? I mean, don't people always shorten that?
Well, they call it Jim or Jimmy.
Yeah,
but it's always.
I like
James,
the name James. I mean, they don't. They, by the way, James, we talk about religion here. They don't call it the King Jim version, do they?
No, they don't.
King James.
James is correct.
Yeah, let's call people James again.
But my last name is where I've caught hell about.
Oh,
it's
my goodness.
Cox.
James
and
Cox.
C-O-C-K. It's C-O-C-K-E. I always tell everybody to put it.
Could have been, James, I mean, your first name could have been Harry. I mean.
Well, I've heard it all. And I had three sons, and they fought their way through school. And, but I was calling because it's Mother's Day coming up.
It is. It's Sunday.
Yep. And my mom was a World War II nurse. She was a Army nurse in surgery. And if that didn't make her lose her mind, my dad died when I was four. And I think that was it. And so I took care of her till she passed a few years ago. But we were watching your show one day, and I'm visually handicapped, so I was listening, and she was watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I look over there, and she points her hand at you like a gun and says, "I'll kill you dead." And we had the biggest laugh about why she wanted to kill you, but I never could understand it. But the other thing I wanted to tell you was about your alligator.
Yeah.
Event. When I was about 20, I was working one summer at the Okefenokee Swamp Park in Waycross, Georgia. And one of my jobs was I had to sweep out the alligator pen. Because the would throw cigarette wrappers and cans and everything else.
They're nasty, by the way.
Yeah. And everybody was listening to this Yankee that was traveling up from Florida, and he was saying, "Them things ain't even alligators, they're caimans." And I didn't even know what a caiman was, but it's a smaller version of an alligator, I guess. But
I hear you.
He was saying, "I would get in there and wrestle one of them gators, but I know he won't." He said, "Because I wrestled real alligators when I was down in Florida."
Hmm.
And everybody looked over at me, and I just pointed over like, "Help yourself." Well, he was
Hey, that's a great story. Jay, I hate to run. We are heading to a break. We have a guest waiting. It is Mother's Day. We certainly hope everyone has a great weekend. We're coming right back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we welcome all of you back. And it has been a breakneck week following our next guest's dispatches from all around, especially about what could be on the horizon. Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated reporting yesterday about meetings that took place on the Hill. And he joins us now. Ross, thanks so much. Yeah, I know you've been very busy, a lot happening. Update us, first of all, on what happened yesterday in Washington. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon. Yeah, it's been It's been quite a wild week. As if we needed anything else in college sports to talk about and cover, we get the commissioner of the SEC and the commissioner of the Pac-12 heading up to Washington, D.C. to lobby for federal NIL legislation and to explain to lawmakers how critical it is and how critical it is for college sports to avoid athletes being deemed employees, and how that might be kind of a crater college sports. So, and that's what they did. They went up there. They also, I think the Olympic committee CEO was with them. Because it was more, as I mentioned, it was more than just about NIL. You know, it was about the Olympic model and how it could be, you know, the non-revenue sports, how they could be impacted by not just NIL, but if athletes were deemed employees, which I know I've talked quite a bit on your show about and where that's headed. And we seem to be heading to that potentially. And if it wanted to, you know, Congress can put a stop to that, but it's a little more unlikely, I think, that they do that than take up NIL. And that just all capped a crazy week, right? Greg Sankey, George Kolakoff going up to D.C. It was an NIL-heavy week from Scottsdale at the conference meetings, and it's an issue that obviously isn't going away anytime soon.
Yeah, let's try to – I mean, there's too much to put into one segment, Ross, but other than the Sankey-Kolakoff meeting in Washington – You've also reported a lot that, you know, maybe the NCAA is going to make an example and come down on some of what is currently going on. Can you explain what the thinking is right now and where it could end up going?
Yeah, we've kind of reached a climax here with the NIL issue. You know, during conference meetings out in Scottsdale, Big 12, Big Ten, Pac 12, Mountain West, they all had conference meetings. And I heard that inside the meeting rooms, it was, you know, the number one issue, and people were very honest about it. It was kind of out on the table that there is recruiting inducements going on, big figure salaries, and you know, NIL isn't being used as by boosters to recruit. And yeah, on Tuesday we broke the news about the guidelines coming next week. And had more at SI.com about that last night. Basically, what's happening with these guidelines, Paul, is it's just reminders, I think, to everybody, specifically the schools and the boosters, of pre-existing bylaws on the books that have been there for years, that boosters cannot be involved in recruiting. They cannot communicate with prospects about recruiting. They cannot arrange deals with prospects. You know, we've obviously seen some of that, some obvious brazen things, and administrators have pretty much had enough, so they're going to release these guidelines, which may or may not have some teeth to them. We'll see, I guess, and they're just reminding everybody boosters can't be involved in recruiting. They need to stop, and those who have been involved, and if there's documented proof that they have been inducing not just high school prospects, Paul, but, you know, inducing other college players off of other teams, then the schools will be found in violation of NCAA rule. And if that does happen, of course, we know where it's headed, right? It probably will end up in court.
Yeah, Ross, I'm trying not to laugh at what you're describing because it's serious reporting about a serious conversation. But we just got through, 2 months ago, under that, watching the president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, award the NCAA basketball trophy to the Kansas City Jayhawks. And, I mean, they've been under the gun for 5 years. Those federal wiretaps that certainly closed the gap on what they've allegedly done. And nothing has yet happened. So why are we to believe that an incompetent organization that really doesn't even have an enforcement staff could make any of this stick?
Well, it's a great point, right? In my last day, Wednesday or Thursday in Scottsdale, I was just able to get some athletic directors on the record, actually, to talk about that and answer that question. You know, if you're reminding schools and boosters about pre-existing bylaws and you're going to retroactively go punish schools for the last 10 months, where was the enforcement the last 10 months? And there's two reasons I found. Well, number one, as you just mentioned, right, the NCAA enforcement is understaffed. It's down about 15 to 20 staff members. And number two, NCAA enforcement is afraid that any enforcing of these guidelines and the bylaws will trigger antitrust lawsuits and more legal entanglements for an organization that seems to lose many legal entanglements. So for those two reasons, they haven't enforced anything. I don't know Paul Y guidelines that will be released will all of a sudden spring them into action. I don't know if it will at all, but administrators are urging that to happen. And even Commissioner George Klyavkov said if, you know, kind of if the NCAA enforcement doesn't start enforcing these bylaws, we'll find kind of a entity that will. And a couple of ADs are publicly and strongly urging enforcement to get on it and start doing their job. But I'll believe it, Paul, when I see it. Just knowing about the legal issues, I mean, some of these boosters and collectives are somewhat protected by state law. So it's a very complicated issue, and it's probably why we haven't seen anything enforced thus far.
Ross, I know what you've written and put on the record, and we're seeing a lot of things on the record that we haven't seen for a long time. But I'm particularly interested as you wander around the hall of the five-star resort out in Scottsdale, as you walk outside in the sunshine with some of these athletic directors and officials and coaches and commissioners. Is there a way to paint a picture of how bad the cheating is currently that is currently going on in intercollegiate athletics?
Yeah, it's pretty rampant. In the biggest issue I've found, and not only out in Scottsdale were ADs and some commissioners, but there were plenty of coaches there as well. Probably three or four dozen coaches were out there, and heard it. It got pretty interesting in some of the coaches' meetings. A lot of honesty, right, on the table of what's going on. A lot of coaches talking about the number one issue right now in all of this is retaining your players. Player agents or other teams or collectives of other teams or representative boosters of other teams are making offers to players on active college rosters to leave, get in the portal, and then sign a deal with the other school. And it's happening quite a bit. It's happened to the point where coaches of the team that are being poached are having to up the ante, so to speak, in NIL money to keep their players. And if they don't, they're losing a player. And guess what happens, Paul, if they lose that player? Well, guess what? They've got to go to another team and try to poach a player. And we're just seeing this kind of vicious cycle happen over and over again. I would say that's the number one issue that's happening, and it's pretty rampant.
Amazing stuff. Ross Dellinger, great reporting. What a week you've had in college football has had. Be well. We'll talk to you very soon as we head to the break. Much more to come right here on the program. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And let's continue with more phone calls. And how about Philip in Memphis? Hello, Philip.
Hey, Paul. Great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Philip.
Paul, I want to talk about Coach Borger's treatise, but quickly before I get to that, the gentleman from Tennessee who told Coach Bryant to go to hell was mistaken. Tennessee had not lost to Alabama 9 in a row before the game in question. They lost 11 in a row, 71-81.
Glad you got that corrected.
I know you are, but that Paul, that guy, unfortunately, and this is no disrespect to you whatsoever, that guy has regrettably become the prototype of the Tennessee fan we run into. You, on the other hand, are erudite, a true gentleman, learned in many disciplines. You're a true Renaissance man. You telling Coach Bryant to go to hell would never happen. But this guy,
well,
is
and Philip, let me assure you, in my experience with him, which was over a several year period, I was afraid to open my mouth around the guy.
Well, he had a key to our house, and I was afraid to say anything to
That's
him.
That's hilarious.
He used our house as a place to crash when he would come to North Alabama.
Now, Philip, I've never discussed this with you. Maybe off the air over a stiff one night.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more about this.
I'll tell you all about it.
Because I will say this and say no more, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. But
I do.
Jerry Pate told me a story once about the Stafford Hotel in Tuscaloosa, and I'll leave it right there.
It's true. I know that story. It's true.
It's a great story.
It is. But Coach Borges makes a compelling case, except the Auburn beat Virginia Tech in their bowl game in 2004.
Right.
They beat them just barely. I represented one of the Virginia Tech assistant coaches who was there in that game, and they felt like they got some home cooking from the ref. But in any event, Auburn should be glad they didn't play for the championship against Southern Cal, because they would have been waxed.
You're right. They barely won that game.
2003, they played Southern Cal in Auburn and lost 4 touchdowns. It was 23-0. And the year before that, they played Southern Cal out in L.A. and lost again. They scored 24 points on Auburn that time. But Auburn's better off just saying, we should have played, we got robbed, and let it go with that. Because had the game occurred with Southern Cal, it would have been embarrassing. Southern Cal really had a good team that year. I'm glad we didn't play them, too.
Well, Philip, you've inspired me to learn one more story from you. So
I got some, Paul. I'll get in touch with you. I'll see you at the next SEC meeting in Atlanta.
I hope so, because it's Philip. It's been too long since we have been together, I am eagerly awaiting the next visit.
We'll get together, Paul.
Thank you,
Philip.
Great
talking to you.
Okay,
take care.
Philip, this guy, some people call up and act like they know what they're talking about. You don't say Coach Bryant had a key to our house if it's not true.
That's right.
I mean, that's not an issue. How about Van in Georgia? Hello, Van.
Hello. Can you hear me, Paul?
I can, yes. Thank you.
Hey, yeah, this is Van Grayson here in Calhoun, Georgia.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, We'd like to say, first of all, I'd like to say Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers across the country.
And, you better believe it.
And what do you think about all this highly recruiting they're talking about Tennessee's got this year? I mean, coming in here.
Well, I think it's a sign of where that program is right now. It's come back from the dead, and I think it has a tremendous amount of momentum.
And we're all sitting over here at the American Legion Post 47 in Calhoun, Georgia. We got a bunch of Bama fans over here. We got one right here, Miss Donna.
Roll Tide!
Roll Tide,
roll! Go Dawgs!
And then we got some Tennessee fans, too, but we just want to see Tennessee be a little more competitive in the future.
Now, I want to know something, Van, because I had the opportunity. Explain to me the American. I once spent the afternoon at a VFW. Is that similar to an American Legion?
It's the same thing.
Okay. It was. all of the men and women there earned it, but I saw a lot of alcohol flowing.
it's all about the veterans here, sir.
Well, I by the way, Van, as the son of a World War II veteran, I salute all of you for what you have done, and I wish my only regret is I'm not sitting there with you in Georgia, tossing a few back.
Well, come on by. Well, you come on by anytime, West Line Street in Calhoun, Georgia. You welcome.
Well, I will be there. You ever been to an American Legion on a Friday afternoon?
Well, not Friday afternoon.
I was friends once. I think he was at the time the lieutenant governor of the state of Alabama. He was on his way out. He had run for governor and lost, and he still had the state protection. So a friend of mine and him and his security, we did a whole afternoon and evening, and then a morning. And one of the stops was the VFW, and I had a blast. But I know what happens there.